number two, Puck and Slick with Ashley Ryan filling in for Puck. You can head for the, you can run for the doors if you like.
I'm just amazed I made it through an hour already.
Only two left.
And I didn't do something to screw it up.
Well, so far.
Well,
so far, so good. Fingers crossed it continues that way.
I haven't tried to talk yet without turning my microphone on, so I consider that a win.
Right. Well, yeah. And then Curtis has your back, too. If you start to do that, he can...
Yeah, well, that's true.
I could just start playing the traffic bed to mess with you.
My heart is still racing. It's...
That was fantastic.
Yeah. You know that dream you have when you're in high school? Or, like, that you're still back in high school? Oh, God. That you're back in high school and like you've gone all semester and you forgot to drop a class and now you have to take a final, but it's like math or French. It's not something you can wing. That is what the traffic music does to me. I still have nightmares that I'm here and I'm supposed to do a traffic report, but like I can't get to the studio.
I never had that nightmare simply because I never cared enough about school for that to be a thing. I have had other recurring dreams about this industry, which... Even if I think about it now, I get chills, so I don't even want to go there. But yeah, no, so I get what you're saying, for sure.
Yes, and every nightmare about traffic, it's like a more complex system I have to go through to get here, and like softies yelling because I just keep missing reports. It's terrible.
Any nightmare that you have where softy is yelling at you, which, I mean, that's his baseline anyways, yelling, but... That's scary.
Or really, where just if softy's in your dreams, that's scary. Yeah.
You don't want that.
No.
You don't want that. Quickly, headlines brought to you by VenueKings.com. Mariners, obviously, are back in play. We've seen it. We've been there. You can be there if you have or haven't. Just go to VenueKings.com. They got you taken care of. Your trusted source for tickets, that is VenueKings.com. Mariners were rained out yesterday in Baltimore, which means a doubleheader today, 105-405. I want to talk about this, the seven-inning doubleheaders. We'll talk about that in a second. Donovan Walton has been brought up as their 27th man, so he will play. Bad news for the Denver Nuggets. Guard Jamal Murray tore his ACL out for the year. Going to have to undergo surgery, so that's too bad there. And then Steph Curry last night passes Wilt Chamberlain to become the Warriors' all-time highest scorer. In franchise history. By the way, 53 points for Steph Curry last night. So
he's unbelievable.
Yeah, he could score. He could score. Back to the Mariners and what's going on today. So a seven-inning doubleheader. And there's some temporary rule changes, permanent rule changes. Baseball has been, for the last couple of years now, just kind of been going through all this. So they got the seven-inning doubleheaders, which the Mariners are going to experience today. Are you a fan of that?
I think it's, for a doubleheader, I like it. I wouldn't like it, like, if they decided to turn every game into just seven innings. That would be absurd.
Oh, God.
But as for the doubleheader, yeah, I'm okay with it.
The thought of turning every game into a seven-inning game, which I wouldn't put past them, by the way,
is that
invokes a reaction in me like the traffic bed does for you.
I legit jump every time it starts.
No, what we're going to do is we're just going to pound this out of you. We're just going to keep hitting you with it until it's nothing.
What's that therapy called, like when you do that?
I don't know.
Aversion therapy?
Aversion therapy. That's right. What it is. I feel like a mouse right now in a box.
What's the phenomenon?
Schrodinger's cat. Isn't that the one where...
The response to the
Pavlov's dog.
That's it.
Pavlov's dog. Schrodinger's cat is like a little cat that's in your hand, and it could be dead or alive, and you don't know. It's both eventualities until you actually see what happens.
So I'm a cat, a dog, and a mouse in this scenario, basically.
Great.
Is what's happened.
All right.
Fair
you are
enough.
A nursery rhyme. But yeah, the 7-8 doubleheader is the other thing, which I'll give you my opinion on in a second. The runner on second base to start extra innings, which... The Mariners have had a couple extra inning games already. They won them both.
Mm-hmm.
One at home, one on the road. What is your feeling on the runner on second base?
Well, this is subjective for me, because if the Mariners had lost both extra inning games, I think it was the worst rule on earth.
Okay.
But because they won both, I think it's the best rule on earth.
All right.
What do you think?
Well, regardless of what the outcome was, which I am always happy for a Mariners win, I think it's the worst rule in the history of sports.
I thought you were going to say that.
And because it is. Right. Well, first of all, it is so cheap. I mean, it's cheap. I mean, it is, you have this game, and I get that they want to keep times down and do whatever and not have people lose interest. But you have this game that's been played over 9 innings, 27 outs, and yeah, it's tied, and you want a resolution. I get that. But because they've gone through so much in this game, and if especially if it's going to extra innings, there's a good chance it's a low-scoring game, which means it's been a pitcher's duel. Mm-hmm. And to cheapen that by, you know, let's say you have a 2-2 game that hits have been hard to come by and everything's scarce and base runners have been haven't been out there, and now you're just going to throw somebody on second base and a team, especially if, like, let's say the home team, you know, they pitch in the top of the inning. If they're able to get the three outs, now all they have to do is bunt a guy over and sacrifice him and win the game. I mean, they don't even have to get a base hit to win.
Okay, so here's my question for you then. Which is a worst rule, or worse rule? The runner on second or a shootout at the end of a hockey game or a soccer game when it's a 0-0 game?
The runner on second. To me. Right. That's as bad as it gets.
Okay.
Now, like with hockey, there's an overtime before the shootout at least.
Yeah, but like they've gone that whole time without scoring.
Yeah.
And then you're saying, hey goalie, sorry, you did a stellar job, but now we're just about to, you know.
Now we're gonna, and the five guys are gonna fire it at you, right? Yeah. One after another.
Heads up.
And with soccer, I mean, I can't defend anything soccer does, so I'm not gonna even try to do that. That's just not where I'm gonna go. But no, I don't mind it so much with hockey. If they went right to that and didn't have an extra 20-minute period,
then it would bother
first,
you
first. I think it would bother me.
Well,
more.
It's only 5 minutes in regular season,
and then how long is it in the playoffs?
In the playoffs, there's no shootouts,
so it just goes.
That's okay. Well,
it's not a full extra period.
It's not as bad.
Yeah,
I'd like it to be a full period.
Yeah,
if it's a full period, then I'd like to see that.
Okay, so you don't like the runner on second. What do you think about the 7 innings then in a doubleheader today?
I'm okay with it for now. Mm-hmm. I don't want it to last. Because I'm not somebody that, you know, I don't need baseball to be quicker.
You're right.
Like, I am fine with it the way it is.
I don't understand people's obsession with why are we worrying about game times constantly.
Yeah. It's like you sit down, it's a baseball game, it's probably going to be 3 to 4 hours of your life that you get to sit down and watch a baseball game.
It's great. You can go do other things, walk in and out of the room.
Yeah.
I mean, or you can do what I think you do in your house and what we do in our house is you put the baseball game on one TV and you put Married at First Sight on the other TV and then you can watch them both at the same time.
I don't even want to think about what Married at First Sight is.
Oh my gosh, it's the best, worst show ever.
Now, I thought that was the one that you have gotten me into now with this season. You and your merry band of...
Oh, Temptation Island?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, it's such hot garbage.
Curtis, I was strong-armed into watching this. What they did is they got my wife. They got her.
Yeah.
And which in turn meant I had to do it. And so now I've been roped into this because I'll do The Bachelor, I'll do Big Brother. Those are the only two reality TV shows I watch. They've thrown this Temptation Island thing at me now, which is...
I mean, if you're going to watch...
That's a perfect description. The worst... No, because it's not even good. It's just
bad. It's hot garbage. But that's the thing.
It is so bad.
If you're going to watch reality television, watch something that's terrible. I mean, that's the best way. These couples are legit 4 couples that go on an island with 20 female singles and 20 male singles, and then they expect that they're going to stay together. It's an amazing premise.
Couples that were already having problems,
yeah.
And they think this island of singles is going to solve it for...
And what makes it worse is they're separated, but they get video clips of what their significant other is doing while they're away from them.
You know what's the best reality TV?
What?
Sports. Sports
That's
is
true.
The best.
You're right. You're
the
right.
The best reality TV there is. And then now there's one other rule. It hasn't been implemented yet in the major leagues, but it's coming. And that's the automatic umpire. The robotic.
Robot umpire. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where there's a little tone if it's a strike or not.
I don't like that.
I don't like it either.
No.
And I know it's hard, but it's hard to defend for me. Like for somebody who, I don't want it. I want just the umpire. It's hard to defend because it gets it right. And in sports, we should be about getting it right. And that's why we have replay. And that's why we have all these rules dedicated to get it right. But there's just something in me that can't go along with it.
It's the imperfectness of the game. It's okay sometimes to not be perfect. Like when you're watching a Mariners game and you see the EQC tracer and it's clearly a ball and it's called a strike and you're yelling at the TV, that's half of the fun of it.
So you want to be upset. You want there to be air so you can yell.
Again, the passion of the whole thing. That's why we watch.
I mean, that's a good point. I guess I never thought of it that way, that what I'd be missing if everything was just right all the time.
Yeah.
Would that make the sport more boring for you if they just got it right all the time?
Yeah, there's no fan base that's going to be all riled up and angry. There's no fan base that's going to, you know, think, oh my gosh, we got away with one. I mean, you don't have any of that anymore.
Yeah. Well, Matt, touching on our conversation from yesterday, if you want more ejections, say goodbye to that. Like,
oh, yeah, I know.
See?
I like the ejections.
I want Lou Piniella walking out there and kicking dirt.
We were talking about services ejection the other day. It was so boring.
Yeah,
it was very nondescript.
He's got to step it up a little bit.
A little bit. I mean,
to play devil's advocate on the pace thing, just throw pitches faster.
Yeah.
Just get through. Just that's the issue.
Sure.
It's the time spent between pitches being thrown.
Right.
It's interminable at times.
And they had rules for batters, mm-hmm. you know, but they don't ever enforce
them. If you go do this. Go pull up a baseball game from the 80s or early 90s on YouTube and watch the rate that pitches happen.
Right.
They come bang, bang, bang.
So, like, yeah, so how do we get back to that?
And now it seems like it takes 90 seconds between pitches at times.
Well,
some people have talked about a pitch clock, but then Chuck has talked about it. He brings up a great point. Then you got fans counting down to the pitch, and that's going to get inside the head of the pitcher and the batter. And it's
With it.
Yeah, I was going to say that actually kind of makes it a little more exciting.
Guys shooting free throws have to deal with the guy waving behind the basket and yelling about him. And I like learn to live with it, man.
Karl Malone had to deal with Sonics fans counting to 10.
For how long some of the pitchers take, it's no wonder that they're pulling muscles because they've thrown a pitch, cooled all the way down, and now they're throwing another pitch.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't like the auto strike zone, but I can't describe why without sounding foolish, because I think we all want accuracy, for the most part.
We do, but I think you can...
I like that you go the other way on that, though.
Yeah.
You're like, give me mistakes.
Yes, exactly. There's something to be said about the beauty of sports and the fact that half of the fan base is going to be devastated and half of the fan base is going to be ecstatic over something so minuscule like a strike call. Oh, God.
No, lucky for you.
You got me that time.
God.
Lucky for you, we have somebody else who's going to do that.
Thank goodness.
We're going to do the traffic update. But first, we're going to get, don't you want to be able to give somebody $1,000?
Absolutely.
Don't you want to be empowered to do that?
Yes.
Well, we have that ability right now with the Grand in Your Hand contest. And remember, it's not a text. You go online, sportsradiokjr.com, and we're going to give you a keyword right now.
Podcasts all in one app.
Coming to you live from our Elliott Avenue studios of Sports Radio 950 KJR. This is our weekly conversation with the Oregonians' John Canzano. Brought to you by Reflex Knee Clinic in Bellevue, the knee experts. Don't let knee pain limit your lifestyle. Log on to ReflexKnees.com to schedule your knee evaluation. Now with John Canzano, here's Puck and Slick.
Hi, Puckett Slick, Sports Radio 950 KJR. Ashley Ryan sitting in for Jason Puckett today. And this is one of my favorite times of the week as we get to talk to John Canzano, the ball face true, that John Canzano BFT. All thanks to ReflexKnees.com. Reflex, get back to life. And this Pac-12 conversation always goes in all kind of different directions, John, but especially since I didn't get to talk to you last week and we got Ashley sitting in here today. They truly have no idea where this is going to go, so I hope you're on your toes today.
I love it. That's the best thing is that, like, that's the best part of radio, right? Like, you know, I write a column and I kind of know where I'm going with the column, but every day you crack that microphone, it's open in front of you guys, and the world is a canvas for you.
No, absolutely. And I wanted to start, actually, outside the Pac-12 and outside of really the sports we typically cover, and just talk for a second just about the Masters this last weekend, because I know you were following along as well. I saw you tweeting. But Hideki Matsuyama and what it meant for him just to be the first Japanese golfer to win a major championship like he was on the men's side and everything. And what a cool scene that was over the weekend.
It felt normal in a weird way. Like, you know, we've gone more than a year in this pandemic, and the Masters and the golf majors have always delivered good stories and a lot of drama. And I love the way a golf tournament unfolds. You know, I've been to Augusta, I've covered that tournament, and it's just, there's a story that happens over 3 or 4 days. And this really became about Matsuyama and, you know, breaking that drought for his country, winning it. And I just thought it was really charming. And, you know, he made a comment about 2 days into the tournament that, you know, he normally has like 20, 25 media members from Japan who follow him around the course and ask him questions, and his media availabilities turn into these marathon sessions because there's just such a thirst for what he's doing. But because of the pandemic, he only had two Japanese writers who were following him. And he commented about 2 days in how relaxing it was for him. And I can't help but wonder, did that play a role in him sort of just relaxing and playing great golf? And you know, there were a lot of storylines going on, but he was a special one.
John, I happened to see something that you retweeted. And so along the lines of the Masters, would you ever do a pimento cheese challenge where you could only eat pimento cheese sandwiches for 24 hours?
Wouldn't do that.
I was there. I haven't eaten one of those things. They're disgusting. And
oh,
they're gone. They're delicious.
They're disgusting. You guys, look, if you're starving, you know what I mean? Like, come home from school, mom and dad aren't around, you're starving, there's nothing else in the refrigerator, hungry.
Yeah, it sticks to your ribs. It's good for you.
I can't imagine Steve Politi's digestive system after that. I you know, it's a little much.
Yeah, sounded terrible.
As tempted as I am to cut this off short, John, just because of that response, there's so much going on in the Pac-12 right now that we have to talk about. And firstly, just the column that you put out on your Twitter just a couple of hours ago, in terms of, you know, this conference is searching for a commissioner still, and searching for maybe some answers with that. You uncovered kind of a deeper story there.
Yeah, you know, the Pac-12, we all know, is looking for a commissioner, and Larry Scott's out, and they're really looking to pivot. And I think, you know, the phase one of this was they hire this search firm. The search firm comes to them and says, okay, give us some criteria. Give us some guidance. What are you looking for? And one of the things that the Pac-12 has that other conferences don't have is you have a really diverse group of campuses. Like, Washington State is not the same as USC, is not the same as Arizona or Oregon or Oregon State or Stanford or Cal. It's really different than like the Big 12 or the Big 10 or the SEC, where you have this core group of campuses that kind of all line up together. It's really a diverse group. So they had a lot of difficulty in the early 3 or 4 weeks even answering that question, because like for Washington State, I know Kirk Schultz at Washington State said that he wanted a commissioner that was going to spend some time in Pullman and stay overnight and listen and ask questions and be present and make Washington State feel like it's part of the conference. And meanwhile, like, you know, USC is going, you know, what can you do to get us more revenue? It's just a really different conversation. So they got stalled there longer than expected. They're nowhere near making a hire right now. I was hopeful that this would already be done. They've probably missed out on a couple of candidates who have moved around other places, but, you know, they're slowly crawling towards getting a short list of candidates. They're just not there yet. And I think they're hoping to do it by the end of this term. They don't want, you know, the campuses to go off into the summer without a commissioner. But, you know, in reporting about that, I got to talking with Michael Schill, the Oregon president. He's the chair of the CEO group. And it's really interesting because, you know, he's a guy, you look at his resume, he ran the law school at Chicago University. He ran UCLA's law school. He's Oregon's president. He went to Princeton. He got his law degree at Yale. And the first thing I think is, this is some guy who grew up wearing a sweater around his neck. You know, like, he's a real stuffy guy. And I really got to talking to him about his story. And it was interesting to get his perspective that, you know, neither one of his parents were college educated. His dad worked in a factory and was laid off for a lot of his career, late in his career, because manufacturing was struggling. His mom was a nurse who became a nurse during World War II. And, you know, it's this real hard scrabble, blue collar upbringing. And I kind of got to talking to him about the cost of education, how kids can afford it. He's really concerned about access. I know for a lot of your listeners who have kids or are in college or maybe young kids, access to colleges in the next 5 to 10 to 15 years. Like, he really is focused on that. And it was really interesting to just get a read on, you know, a guy who I misread a little bit. I thought, here's an Ivy League snot who's going to be stuffy. He's leading the university. And I walked away going, you know what? I feel really good that this guy's the chair of the Pac-12 CEO group.
John, going back a little bit to kind of the desires of all these different schools being being varied in terms of what kind of commissioner that they want, do you get the gut feeling that it's going to be a certain type? So like you were mentioning, you know, somebody who may be focused more on the financials of it versus somebody who's more focused on the student athletes and being on campus and that aspect of it. Do you feel it's going to be somebody that's more, I guess, more centralized in their focus? Or do you think it'll be somebody who's a bit of a jack of all trades there?
It's going to be like they got to correct, right? So Larry Scott was a suit. He was basically a guy who was there to serve as a CEO and negotiate contracts. He had no connection to the campuses. He has never worked on a campus. He doesn't understand the challenges of an AD or football coach. And frankly, he lacked football knowledge. I mean, it became evident like during the replay scandal and the fiasco there. But he, I think he serves as a great, like, you know, starting point. And you have to pivot from that. I expect that they're going to go to somebody who's deeply connected to campuses, who has worked on campuses, who has been an AD, probably maybe even been a football coach or an AD or played football. And I also think there's going to be, you know, there's going to be the campus connection, and then it's going to be somebody who really understands football. You have to go in that direction. It's why from the beginning I was looking at Oliver Luck, Andrew Luck's dad, who's familiar with the conference, who knows football, who knows campuses, has been an AD, and then Gene Smith at Ohio State, same thing, like really ingrained in campuses and in football. I think the next hire is going to be a football expert who is connected to campuses.
How likely do you think the next commissioner is to actually be able to get a better TV deal done for the Pac-12? I mean, they're still not on DirecTV.
Yeah, and you know, I was looking at their subscriber numbers. Their subscriber numbers are like ESPN Deportes, the Sportsman Channel. I mean, their numbers are just bad. But I also saw the financials that just came out this week with, you know, the network is going to be able to distribute about $3 million more per university this year. And it's a direct result of cost cutting. It has nothing to do with them getting a better deal. Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do with them selling more advertising, ratings. They just basically laid off a bunch of people. They replaced camera operators with remote cameras. You probably saw it on basketball games. It looked like, you know, somebody had just set up a camera at the arena and streamed it and walked away. So that's the short-term fix. They're just trying to find more revenue. But it's a great question what you asked there, because it's literally, you know, you look at basketball and how quickly this conference pivoted from being the Pac-12 stinks, don't pick any of their teams in your bracket, to, oh my gosh, look at, they have three in the Elite Eight, they have one in the Final Four. So it can turn rapidly. I think the basketball tournament really will help them in their negotiation. Mm-hmm. But their problem is Larry Scott sat on his hands and said, you know, we're going to wait till the end of the deal to negotiate. Well, it's left them with almost no inventory. ESPN has a deal with the SEC that's going to eat up a whole bunch of inventory. The Big Ten's already gone. The Big 12's already gone. So I think they're going to get leftovers. You're going to get weird kickoff times and game days to start. I think you'll see some Friday games. But I think the short-term solution is get a deal done and get that network out of San Francisco, get the headquarters out of San Francisco at the end of the lease in 2022, get it somewhere more affordable, and then try to get it. You have to get a team in the playoff. It's just like these basketball teams. You've got to get in the playoff.
We're talking with John Canzano. You can read him at The Oregonian. You can listen to him on Portland 750 The Game. And he's brought to us by ReflexKnees.com. Reflex, get back to life. John, in what was seemed like the most drawn-out process in the history of sports, Sean Miller was finally let go down at the University of Arizona, their men's basketball program. Is the search to replace him going to be is equally drawn out? I mean, which I guess would mean a 3 to 4 year search, so probably not. But how do you see that going?
Yeah, it's a mess right now, and a lot of people at Arizona are upset already over what has gone on. Now, Sean Miller needed to go. They waited too long to get rid of him, so that's part of the problem. You also have a university president who was heavy-handed in hiring the football coach, who also wants to be involved in hiring this basketball coach. So you've got a lot of cooks in the kitchen with the university president. You have some key boosters who are advocating for their people. And then you've got Lute Olson's camp. You know, Lute Olson's wife is banging the drum right now for Damon Stoudemire.
Yeah.
You've got boosters who want Tommy Lloyd to get that job, the Gonzaga assistant. And then in the 11th hour, there, you know, there's two more candidates who have emerged. Eric Musselman, yesterday I was told, was in discussions with Arizona. And then a couple hours later, here comes a contract extension from Arkansas. So I don't know if Musselman used them or if Arkansas just backed up the truck. I don't know what happened there. Also, Bryce Drew, his name has surfaced as well. I'm in touch with some people who are close to this discussion. I can't really say who I'm talking to here, mm-hmm. but I'm told Tommy Lloyd may not be the pick, and he was the front runner about 24 hours ago. Either there are concerns about him having no head coaching experience, or the university president is pushing back against a donor essentially making this decision. There's a big donor at Arizona. It's their number one donor, who's also a Gonzaga fan, who wants Tommy Lloyd to replace Sean Miller. So it's a Damon Stoudemire, Tommy Lloyd standoff right now. I'll be really curious to see how it goes, because I know that Arizona's in touch with both of those candidates, and they're doing their diligence. They have to post the job. They have some legal requirements. But I'm told Damon Stoudemire hit it out of the park in the interview. I just don't know if Arizona, I don't know what they're going to do. Like, they held on to Sean Miller so long, it makes me question their judgment to begin with.
We're 4.5 months away from football season, but I mean, spring practice, you know, they're starting off all over the conference. And last year was obviously about how we deal with a pandemic and just, can we get a football season in and how can we do it? This year, and we're seeing it in all sports, is more how much of normalcy can we return back to? And so I'm wondering, obviously it's still a ways off, but what do you think? I mean, COVID has changed everything and in some ways permanently. So how, in what ways will football be different this year in the Pac-12, do you think, than it's been in previous years?
Expectations, I think, you know, it was really hard, I think, in this last season for a lot of fans to not be in the stadium and to wonder why you were watching SEC games and games in other parts of the country that had fans. So I think our expectations have been adjusted to begin with. But I think the players are much more accustomed to the kind of, you know, just protocols that they're going to have to follow. I think it's going to be less of a distraction with health regulations. Certainly the vaccine, knock on wood, I'm hopeful that, you know, by late summer, everybody's in a much better place. The variants are under control and that they're talking about, you know, having fans in the stadiums. I know the universities badly want fans in the stadiums. They need fans in those stadiums. They need it to make their budget, and they want that enthusiasm and atmosphere back. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see sort of how that plays out. And again, talking to Michael Schill at Oregon, you know, he's hopeful that you know, we have gone through the worst of this, and I think we're all kind of in that position. But man, I don't know about you guys, but my expectations have just been totally reframed, and I would love to see fans in the stadium. I'd love to see players not having to miss games, not the contact tracing nightmare that existed in some counties. Like to see that go away. And we all want to keep people safe, but I feel like also, you know, we have seen it done successfully in other parts of the country, including the college football playoff, which had fans inside the stadiums.
Yeah. Washington had fans inside their open practice on Saturday. One of the people in the stands was JT Tuimoloau, who, of course, Oregon, USC, and Washington are all very interested in seeing what he's going to decide. Do you
and have, Alabama yeah, and Ohio State,
right? But I'm just talking Pac-12 here. Do you see him making a decision this month?
Sometimes you know, and sometimes the athletes just like to be recruited, right? And I think that's part of the portal problem that we're seeing.
Yeah.
There's 1,000 basketball players, Division I basketball players, that are in the portal. And I think, 50% of them probably just miss being recruited. So some people love it, some people don't. And I get the impression that, like, you know, I'm reading, you know, he might visit Ohio State in June. He might, you know, he might be looking at Georgia. Might be
Oh, wow.
I get the impression that he just kind of wants to maybe enjoy this a little bit. I don't know. I think if you're a Pac-12 program, of course you want him. You want a 6'5", 280-pound guy on your roster. But it feels to me like it's Alabama, Ohio State, if you're going, you know, if you're going into teams that have been inside of the college football playoff, and if that's important to you, or if it's a Pac-12 school, I kind of like the Pacific Northwest schools. I like Oregon and Washington, and the connection with Joe Salavea at Oregon, keep an eye on that as well. I mean, I know everybody thinks they have an angle, but I just hope the kid does well.
Yeah.
We need a Pacific Northwest positive story. I wish the kid the best. I don't care where he goes. I'm excited for him.
I agree.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where he goes, and no matter where it is, it'll be fun to watch for sure, and claim as one of our own up here in the Pacific Northwest. John, really appreciate it as always, and we'll talk to you next week when Puck is back in here.
You guys take care. Have a great day.
All right, John Canzano there from the Oregonian, and from the game down in Portland, Reflex Knees brings us John Canzano every week at 11:20. We will take a break. We'll come back. It is Tweet of the Day here on Puck and Slick, Sports Radio 950 K.
Strike and 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 strike until you have victory. For every enemy that is aligned against you, let there be that we would strike the ground.
This is one of my, this is probably my favorite time of the day.
Okay.
Now, it's more fun when Jason does the work, and I just get to sit back and enjoy it, but, you know, it is what it is. He's gone, I'm here. Slick Hawk on Puck and Slick here with Ashley Ryan. Curtis Crabtree's here as well. Ashley's in the Chalet Bowl studio right in front of me.
I know, I feel like I'm very alone in here.
I know, it's a big room, and it's a little you, and... There you are. But
here,
you know,
I am.
There you are. I can see you, though, so that's good. That's good news.
Also, that's the first time anyone's ever called me little, so thank you.
You're like a fish. It's a fishbowl in there, really.
I feel like that.
You got in this here and that there, and yeah. Later Ian's going to be in there, so it's we're all very separated, and that's just the world we live in right now. So, tweet of the day for the uninitiated. We scour the internet, social media, everything to find something that is usually entertaining, hopefully, or funny, or just makes us scratch our heads.
Okay.
I did find this today. So if you have something you'd like to submit for Tweet of the Day, you could send it to me at SlickHawk12. Curtis, your Twitter is?
Curtis_Crabtree.
And you can even send something to Ashley if you want.
Yeah.
And that is?
Ashley Lola Ryan.
Ashley Lola Ryan. Look at that. So we all know about the epidemic of parents taking sports too seriously with their kids, or I don't know, referees who get, I mean, you know, parents that yell at referees and things. Usually, at least I like to think, it doesn't usually come to blows,
right?
Though. But in the Indiana AAU system, you know, Indiana, they take their basketball very seriously there.
The Hoosier State.
Exactly. So It's not as surprising when you see the fact that one of these situations did actually come to blows between a parent and one of the referees.
Oh my goodness.
But also with one of the players getting involved. The video is funny in and of itself.
Okay.
But because you just get to watch it kind of evolve. But what makes it Tweet of the Day worthy is that somebody went and did a voiceover.
Oh, no.
Announcing the entire thing. Kind of like, you know, John Boy, you know, when there's like a dust up in baseball and John Boy will go out and they'll do like a voiceover explaining things. Well, somebody did something similar to that here.
Oh, my goodness.
We're back
goodness.
Live here at the Fishers Fieldhouse here in Indiana, the AAU tournament. Baylor is down 22 to INDI. There was a controversial call on the court. As you can see, the head coach is not happy with the refs. They're still hashing it out. And just like that, we got a tech on Baylor. That'll be their first tech of the game. Oh, they're grabbing their bags. It appears Baylor is packing their bags and going home with 16 seconds left in the first quarter. You don't see that often here. Oh, and the ref is still going out with the team. They are not very happy. Oh, we got a man here filming the referee. As I say these days, video or didn't happen. Well, we'll see it now. And, oh, and the ref swings. The righty to the whitey. Here comes the dollar 2-on-1 fight. It's a no-holds-barred 3-on-1. The son with the purse around his neck is going at the ref, too. And now Dad has a grip on the referee. And oh, my God, a swim! John Cena. And now the four-star athlete is just putting in rounds on the dead zebra. Boys and girls, it is time for the Running Back Turbo Instant Replay brought to you by Jimmy Johns. As you see, the referee is going to slap the father from the stands. And then the father hits the whitey with the righty. Take a look at how quickly the man in the neon Brown switches his phone from his right hand to his left hand and hits the man with the right hook. And just when the referee thought he was full, he got a second helping from the Neon Man. The body slam by the Neon Man is just something you cannot find in any WrestleMania. But what really stole the show was when the four-star crew threw not one, not two, not three, but four haymakers to the dead corpse. Well, we'll see you next week. Thank you to Jimmy John's for being our sponsor, Freaky Fast Delivery.
Wow.
There's a lot to unpack there.
I saw the tweet, too, that you post. I mean, it's pretty impressive.
the righty to the whitey, I think, was my favorite part of that.
I like that the dad in the neon is legitimately on a cell phone, and then all of a sudden, it's just a full-on fight.
Yes, it kind of escalated from there. As you heard, he quickly put the cell phone from his right hand to his left hand so then he could slap the referee with his right hand.
That's a veteran move.
Right. It is. It is. And they don't teach that everywhere, but they teach in Indiana.
Yep.
And then you had the basketball player. And I think this is about to be like middle school ACU.
I was
going to
say they're like 11 years old.
And he's taking shots.
It's you only see something like this in WrestleMania.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which just happened over the weekend, by the way.
Oh, there you go.
Tweet of the day. If you have something, don't hesitate to submit it. Slickhawk12, Curtis_Crabtree, at Ashley Lola Ryan, and when he's here, at Jason Puckett 20. One more hour to go, including headlines and brought to you by Buddies, Goodies, and Glass. Coming up next, here in the last hour of Puckett Slick with Ashley Ryan here on Sports Radio 950 KJ.